Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, later this week, our friends at the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters are going to be hosting their 2022 Environmental Summit. So we're going to check in to see what attendees have in store and why you might want to log in to hear from lawmakers, advocates, policy experts, and the public about why key environmental issues. Well, later this week, our friends at the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters are going to be hosting their 2022 Environmental Summit. So we're going to check in to see what attendees have in store and why you might want to log in to hear from lawmakers, advocates, policy experts, and the public about the key environmental issues that are going to be proposed for the 2022 legislative session. Then we're going to visit with the director of Connecticut's Office of Health Strategy, which promotes equal access to high-quality health care and ensures better health for everyone across the state. On this visit, we're going to look into the business of local hospitals and key in on data from the OHS's annual report on the financial status of Connecticut's short-term acute care hospitals. Then we're going to close, touching base with the Northeast Organic Farming Association of Connecticut, and preview NOFA Connecticut's 40th Winter Conference. Stay tuned and get a preview of this virtual information-packed event that's starting February 11th and offering over 20 workshops on farming, seed saving, organic land care, community food security, social justice, and more. We're going to be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Registration is now being taken for a free 6-week Live Well with Chronic Pain telephone workshop for adults on Tuesdays between February 1st and March 8th from 10 to 11 a.m. Sponsored by the Western Connecticut Area Agency on Aging, participants can join from the comfort of their home without having to use any technology beyond their mobile phone. The toll-free WCAAA conference call line is used to connect participants to a trained Lived Well leader who facilitates the workshop, which is limited in capacity for attendance. So you need to call and register now or learn about future workshops and sessions in Spanish by calling the Area Agency on Aging, serving Western Connecticut, at 203-574-6746 or the Area Agency on Aging where you live. Or you can visit WCAAA.org. We love visiting with Lori Brown and the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters. They do such important work here across the state. This is a bipartisan statewide nonprofit dedicated to giving our environment a voice at the Capitol. And this year, hopefully, we're going to see a full-scale return of human beings in the Capitol and in the legislative offices. And hopefully, that will bode well for good conversations and leadership on behalf of our state and its environment. Their 2022 Environmental Summit is coming up quick later this week as we broadcast on Sunday the 23rd. And Lori Brown is with us. Thanks for joining us again, Lori, and great to hear your voice.
Thank you, John, and thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it. There's just so much going on, like you said. The environment is top and center in terms of what we need to move forward with this session. And, you know, the League of Conservation Voters has been actively working with environmental groups across the state on a variety of issues, environmental issues all around our air, land, water, wildlife, climate. And it's trying to advance alongside our partners and our champions at the state level, the state capital, all the issues that will protect, you know, both human health and the environment going forward. So every year we do what's known as the Environmental Summit. So we bring together all of the experts and advocates who are actually, you know, working hard on these issues and organizing around issues to get a better state policy in place, and working with our friends at the state capitol, our champion lawmakers who carry a lot of the weight of the legislative issues that have to pass each year. Mm-hmm. And we pull everyone together before the session. There's an environmental summit, as you mentioned, coming up. It's next week on Tuesday and Thursday, and strongly recommend anybody who is interested in seeing what our state is actually doing to protect the environment, what issues are in play, whether it's expanding solar power, banning pesticides, protecting our forests, reducing pollution from transportation. It all eventually comes through the state legislature, and that's where we focus, and that's where we really can make things happen that affect everyone in their daily lives.
Yeah, the other cool thing is not just about your conference and your summit, but your constituency is you go all the way from the voters who mark the ballots to put these lawmakers into office and to work for the people of the state of Connecticut, all the way up to those lawmakers, and then a whole busload of experts in between in the environmental field who consult, whether they're with nonprofits, private industry or organizations, or governmental organizations, state or federal. So there's a lot going on. But before we talk a little bit more in depth about some of the subjects you hope to tackle or continue carrying from previous legislative sessions, you got some news as we're recording this today about some special guests that are going to be on the platform. And I guess it's also important to point out that the access to this summit is going to be pretty convenient because it's happening on two separate days, January 25th and 27th, from noon to 2:30 p.m. So while people kind of have to mark off and save the dates and times in their calendar, I guess it provides a lot more flexibility for folks who may not have to truck all the way up to Hartford or the site of the summit in person.
That's right. It will be the second time we've had to do the summit virtually. So it is absolutely, usually it has been a whole long day where everyone's in the same room, lawmakers, advocates, members of the public, administration officials. And that, for abundance of caution, obviously, we don't want to be putting people in any kind of health danger. But we found that having these lunchtime sessions really was quite popular. It almost doubled the number of people who participated. And this year, we expect that to continue growing. So hopefully people can take some time, either the first or second day or the whole time, whatever they want. They can look at the agenda and see if they're particularly interested in a subject they want to know more about. And it's not the summit itself is so that everybody can look at what's on the table, like be united and see what's there. What are we dealing with here? What do we need to try to solve? And what are the proposals that people are putting forward? So it's not a heavy duty, technical, in-depth, on each particular issue. It's really what is the broad array of issues that we need to tackle together, the advocates, the lawmakers, the public, the administration. And making it virtual really allows, we're all about engagement of the public, right? That's what we're trying to do most. We need people to be more involved. The more people are involved with getting behind a certain protection or policy, the more likely lawmakers are going to take it up at the legislature, and the more likely you're going to have some really good results with good policies being changed at the state level.
So you've
we do this every year.
Yeah. So, I was going to say you've got the governor coming in and Katie Dykes from DEEP, as well as some heavy hitter environmental leadership representing both the House and the Connecticut Senate. But also, as you said, a lot of environmental experts. And of course, all of these people are familiar with the league, and they're familiar and know about the conference every year and the implications of participating and all the other work you do in terms of the legislative environmental scorecard and things like that. But I really would like to drive the point home that this conference will have its best results if general citizens take the time to attend, right?
Yes, it's absolutely geared for the range of involvement and knowledge. So you do not have to be an expert, but if you are involved, most people are not involved in the broader range of all different issues, but it is a place where you can learn about what are the key issues that are taking place right now. A lot of people might just be interested, say, in, you know, the local forest and how what's going on at the state level that's going to help protect, you know, land in my district, in my area. And it also is incredibly important just because it unifies people and it lets them know, you know, there's a group of advocates working on just about any issue that you can name in Connecticut.
Yeah.
There are people who are working on something to make it better and make it more protected. And a lot of times the general public who is interested, the citizen who really cares about something, doesn't really know where to go, where to look, or how to get involved. And this is a very specific sort of effort to make sure that people are aware of what issues that are being decided every session. What is the agenda this year? Mm. And so it's just as informative for lawmakers as it is even for individual advocates. We all get to see what everybody else is working on and how can we combine you know, our efforts. And
sure.
We do have, everybody waits very, of course, we want to hear what the governor has to say, what his vision is for, like, his major focus and under the administration and the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection has their hands in everything that affects us. But on the legislative side, in particular, the co-chairs of the Environment Committee, Senator Christine Cohen and Representative Joe Gresko, everybody is wondering also, like, what are their priorities going to be? Because this will shape quite a bit what everybody puts their weight behind. But there are other lawmakers that will be presenting as well. The chair and vice chair of the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus is going to present their priorities also and legislation dealing with environmental justice and equitable investments. But the experts are providing snapshots all the way through, you know, between presentations and some panels, snapshots of what are the big areas that are game-changing efforts that we need to take in Connecticut as a state to tackle climate change, to protect our natural resources, to expand our clean energy. You know, that might be a glaze over for some people, but others are really excited about solar power and they want to know what's happening at the state level on solar or offshore wind.
Sure.
I mean, basically we have been a leader on the environment in Connecticut. We are currently slipping and we need to change that. And of course, at the federal level, things are really gridlocked and everybody's looking to the state and the states to make progress. And so the good news is, you know, we've got all these advocates like working away hard 24/7, always working with lawmakers, always coming together and figuring out what do we need to do and how do we need to do it and how do we get more people involved. So it's a really exciting annual event. I'd recommend it for anybody who wants to know more about the environmental issues in Connecticut that are in play.
Great. Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Lori, let's remind folks that if they might only be able to attend one or the other of these summit gatherings virtually on either January 25th or 27th. On the 25th, the agenda includes state funding, environmental justice, climate and energy, and environment committee priorities, while on the 27th, DEEP and administration priorities are on the agenda, along with waste management, pesticides, transportation, youth perspectives on climate and land conservation. But what's kicking it all off around noontime on January 25th is a tribute to Julie Balaga. So I just wanted to not run out of time before you had a couple moments to talk about that.
Thank you. Yes. And of course, Julie, for many people may remember Julie Balaga. She was the founder of the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters, along with Russ Brenneman. And she was the, you know, engine behind really a lot of the work and the fact that environment, which was 20 years ago, not as mainstream and political as it is today. And she had been essential in getting our league established and really becoming mainstream political work at the Capitol. And so she passed away in November, and she has, her family's established actually a CTLCV scholarship for interns. And so for those out there who are looking for internships, we're always looking for, you know, bright young people who want to get more involved in policy and advocacy and the environment. So that's going to kick it off. And a lot of people, of course, she ran for governor a number of years back. And so, we really will always remember Julie with real fondness.
Well, as we have often done with you, Lori, we do this nice, quick and dirty preview of the event to try to drive more people and help, regular folks understand why their presence at the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters annual summit is so important. Easier than ever this year on January 25th and 27th because it's happening on Zoom. If you want to find out more and register and to attend, it's ctlcv.org and just look for the Environmental Summit header and click on the button. And in the meantime, we will thank you again, Lori, for being part of the program today and giving us a heads up on what's in store. And we look forward to circling back with you in a couple of weeks to find out what's coming out of the session and how folks who may not have been able to attend can learn a few things that they might want to go to bat for, writing letters or sending emails or calling their state representatives here in Connecticut as the session rolls out in early February. So thanks so much. It has been way too long since we caught up with our friend Vicky Veltri, Victoria Veltri, who last was here on her last assignment as the state healthcare advocate. She also was a policy advisor for former Lieutenant Governor Nancy Wyman. Now she is the executive director of the Connecticut OHS, the Office of Health Strategy. And Vicky, it's been quite a long road, but great that you have been able to both continue serving the citizens of Connecticut in many different capacities, but also that it has essentially seemed like one position has kind of fed and advised and informed the next and the next and so forth.
Yeah, well, first of all, John, let me say thank you for having me on this morning. Very happy to be with you today.
Sure.
Yes, I think you're right. You know, when you start on the advocacy side of the equation and then you build up a certain level of knowledge, then you see what's happening in the national arena and in the policymaking arena up in the highest, you know, echelons of the administration. And then working as an executive director of an agency with multiple charges underneath it, you really get a full picture of what's happening in the space.
Your involvement with Lieutenant Governor Nancy Wyman helped you build relationships with a lot of people who, if they're not still serving as elected officials in government, they may still be involved in Connecticut's government in some capacity. And, you know, you've got a nice bridge with a lot of people in regards to your work with OHS.
Yes. You know, you realize Connecticut is a very small state. And I say this to people all the time, but we're not living in Kevin Bacon land with 6 degrees of separation, but we only have 1 degree of separation between people who know each other in the state. And, you know, when you get involved in the kind of work we did at OHA and then with Lieutenant Governor Wyman and now at OHS, you're constantly having discussions with the legislative branch, and others in the administration about what's happening on the ground in healthcare and how to work together to try to solve those problems. We don't always get to solving every problem, but, you know, you realize in this space you have to work with people and you have to work with each other and to find solutions to the most complicated problems there are out there. And there are many. And when it comes to healthcare, it's very complex.
Yeah, and with your and with your tenure, you know, at least there is a degree of trust and a knowledge of the many personalities that probably contributes to things going a little bit smoother.
Yes, it does. I think, you know, I think a lot of what happens in terms of resolving issues that consumers face or the healthcare system overall faces depends on good and solid relationships and trusted relationships with people. And it takes time to build those up. But I think, you know, I think we're in a good position as our agents in an agency perspective in terms of our relationships with people and the thought that we bring to the problems that citizens are facing and our employers, for that matter, because healthcare is expensive in the state of Connecticut. And, you know, we need to address that problem, but we need to do it in a way that brings people to the table together rather than throwing, you know, grenades at people.
Sure, sure.
The better way to get things done is to pull people together and try to resolve things. And that's sort of been our MO. And that's kind of the way I've worked in my whole career. And I hope will get us to some good decision-making and good policy choices in the coming session.
Yeah, well, it's all about, as your agency is branded, it's all about strategy and utilizing data to boil down issues that are going to benefit Connecticut citizens, but higher quality health care, controlled costs, you know, part of your mission, but overall with the benefit of hopefully lifting all boats when it comes to the individual health of Connecticut citizens.
Yeah, I mean, the data should drive everything. In my opinion, you know, we talk a lot about policy and we work closely with, obviously, as I said before, our co-agencies, people in the executive branch and external stakeholders, honestly, in healthcare, which there are many to work with. But the data really needs to drive the discussion. And I think up until this last year, and while we have been putting out financial data consistently over the years, because we're statutorily charged to do that, we've sort of looked at bringing together all the pieces of healthcare data to paint a truer picture of what's happening in healthcare in the state of Connecticut. So that means bringing together not just the financial data, but what is showing up in terms of how people use services, the price of those services, what their out-of-pocket costs are. So really bringing those chief components that are responsible for healthcare spending together so we can look at it collectively and then make solid decisions based on the data. First, you have to get everybody to agree, right, that what they're looking at is accurate data and consistent data. And then, you know, maybe pick off one or two things that you can work together on to drive down either healthcare costs or improve the quality of care or, you know, reduce healthcare disparities, of which Connecticut really has quite a few. Mm. So there's no shortage of things for us to work on in collaboration with stakeholders.
Well,
sometimes, you know, we can't get everything done right away, and that's frustrating to many people. But we try to work collectively, and I think that's the best way to get longer policy solutions that will last.
Yeah, when you can, it may take a long time, but once the ship of government turns in the right direction to benefit the public health of everyone in Connecticut, there's little or no downside, certainly. And we're going to be talking about your office's latest annual report on the financial status of Connecticut's short-term acute care hospitals, and that's going to be coming up in just a few minutes. But it's not super sexy, fast-paced information, but it's really important for people to understand, because as we kind of talked about before we turned on the microphone, people have to stick their hands in their pockets when they get involved, typically in anything having to do with hospitalization. So it's important for them to understand how these healthcare entities operate, and this report can really help inform them. And I know you're going to be helping to do that. But first, give us a little bit more background so folks can really understand what the OHS does. You guys have three separate, distinct units operating there.
Right, we do. We have a health systems planning unit, which used to be called the Office of Healthcare Access, and that unit really works on a lot of things, including the report that you just mentioned, the Financial Stability Report. They collect a lot of data about hospitals across the state of Connecticut, about discharge data in hospitals, how many people have gone through the hospitals, what's going on in the outpatient healthcare space in terms of the use of outpatient facilities. And every couple years, we put out a statewide facilities plan. The unit is responsible for doing that. The other big charge we have is reviewing hospital mergers and things related to, let's say, somebody wants to come in and build a mental health facility or substance use facility. They need to come to the office and verify that what they're doing is will be good for the people of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the units. The other unit, or one of the other two units, is a health information technology team. And that's got a lot of work under it, too. That team is really responsible for oversight of our statewide health information exchange, which is a tool by which patient records can be shared between providers to help coordinate patient care, and that hopefully patients will have access to understand their medical records better. That unit also is really in charge of coordinating statewide health information technology initiatives. So it goes beyond that health information exchange to lots of the tools our agencies are using. So working collaboratively with the agencies about the tools to get data out there and share data across agencies and with the healthcare sector. And then there's also a very large database called the All Payer Claims Database that technology team oversees, which is a huge repository of healthcare spending data that we have in the office that we oversee, which is why we're able to really have insight into healthcare spending. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Health Innovation Unit, and that unit sort of has, I hate to say, almost a catch-all role, but it's doing a lot of innovation activities, chiefly at this point, two major responsibilities. One is implementing Governor Lamont's Executive Order Number 5, which is really about trying to keep the rate of spending growth of healthcare in check in Connecticut. So setting a target or a benchmark, as we call it, mm-hmm. for the rate of growth of spending of all healthcare in the state of Connecticut. So we make that data more transparent and we try to drive our spending growth downward so that, you know, you could see people's incomes aren't rising as fast as the rate of healthcare spending is.
Okay.
When that happens, that's a recipe for unaffordable healthcare. So that unit is really focusing on that and some really exciting work on upstream, like prevention activities mm-hmm. and working deep in communities around engaging community collaboratives to help invest in activities that could improve healthcare or well-being for people overall, like working on challenges with nutrition and food security and trauma and adverse child events in communities. So very exciting work going on in that unit.
Excellent.
And when you put them all together, we have a pretty good picture of what's going on in healthcare in the state there and how go. We can move forward.
The Office of Health Strategy is headed up by our guest this morning, Executive Director Vicky Veltri. This agency is dedicated to better health at lower costs for everyone in our state. A simple solution with a lot of complex working parts. We're going to get to understand some of them as we talk a little bit about the annual report on the financial status of Connecticut's short-term acute care hospitals. We'll be right back to talk more about this with Vicky Veltri. Stay with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, have you heard the IRIS Run for Refugees is back in person on Super Bowl Sunday, February 13th, resuming the popular flat 5K run and walk through New Haven's East Rock neighborhood. Or you can exercise a virtual option and run, walk, or bike a 5K in your neighborhood, on your treadmill, or wherever you like. Create an individual or team fundraiser to support IRIS's services to help refugees with housing, healthcare, job placement, education, and much more. Since the 2021 Taliban takeover, IRIS has welcomed 370 Afghan evacuees and is committed to welcoming 600 throughout the rest of this year, the most IRIS has ever resettled in 1 year. So sign up to help us welcome new Americans Americans from Afghanistan and all over the world. LinkedIn details and the online registration hub by visiting IRISCT.org and just hit the news and events tab. Well, thanks for sticking with us. You may have heard of the OHS, the Office of Health Strategy. Their director, Vicki Veltri, is with us and bringing her leadership from her former work as a policy advisor to former Lieutenant Governor Nancy Wyman, a health policy advisor, as well as the last time we actually talked to her in her official capacity as the state healthcare advocate on For the People. Now, as the executive director of OHS, she's working to ensure that the state implements comprehensive data-driven strategies to promote access to high-quality health care, control costs, and ensure better health for all of us here in Connecticut. Their annual report on the financial status of Connecticut's short-term acute care hospitals was recently released. So, Vicki, start by telling us as citizens who probably have very little insider experience in the language and the complexities of the way hospitals run and finance the work that they do. Why is it important for the quote-unquote average citizen maybe to take a look at a report like this?
Well, there's a couple reasons I can think of. First of all, we need robust health care in the state of Connecticut. So we need a solid hospital market, a hospital system mm-hmm. across the state of Connecticut. So in order to ensure that we have that, we want to make sure that our hospitals are financed appropriately, and we want to have information about how they're financed. Secondarily, I think it's important for people to understand how hospitals are paid and how they are paid affects people's wallets. And I think that's a bigger leap. That second part is a bigger leap and maybe a little bit more of a challenge to understand. But when people get health care, right, they pay a premium. They pay their insurance premium. Into that premium goes the expenditures for their health care, whether it's at hospitals, you know, their drug costs, whether it's at their doctor's offices, whether they have, you know, durable medical equipment, as we call it, mm-hmm. You know, wheelchairs, et cetera. All of those costs are built into their insurance. So understanding a little bit about each component, I think, is important. And understanding what's happened with hospital financing over the years is also important, because we see years like last year that hospitals were heavily impacted by the COVID pandemic. As we all were personally, hospital finances were really heavily impacted by the COVID pandemic. And the challenge of those finances being impacted translates into what people pay for healthcare. So it's a bit of a complicated report, but it's chock full of information that impacts consumers every single day.
Well, let's spend the rest of our time talking about a few of those highlights in the report. You mentioned, you know, the COVID pandemic really had a huge impact on hospitals. But I'm seeing here from one of these points that you sent over that about two-thirds of Connecticut's hospitals in the latest report achieved something called a positive total margin. Can you explain right. that a little bit?
Yes. So we talk about margin because, you know, most of the hospitals in the state of Connecticut are nonprofit. We have one for-profit system, but the rest of them are non-for-profit. So when we talk about margin, we're talking about the amount of revenue, you know, the amount of funding they have achieved over their expenses. So they all, just like all of us have, you know, set level of expenses we have to pay out every month.
Yeah.
They do too. Hospitals do too. And the difference between that and what the money is that came to them in the form of insurance payments for people who are covered by insurance, through the Medicaid program, through funding from the federal government in terms of pandemic relief. You add all that up, and if their revenue exceeds their expenses, that's their margin. So last year, two-thirds of the systems, despite the pandemic, or two-thirds of, the hospitals achieved a positive margin.
Came out in the black, so to speak.
They came out in the black in the vernacular, right? They came out in the black. Maybe a little bit lower in most cases for many of them. But considering the year we were in, we'd rather have them be in that situation, right, than the reverse.
Yeah, I guess the disparity wasn't alarming between 19 and 20.
It wasn't as alarming. There was definitely a very big impact in terms of their daily operations. But because of very solid performance by the stock market, which probably if people looked at their 401ks in the last year, they did pretty well. That offset a bit of the impact that they had on, the daily operations. So the kind of, if they had good investments, right, their margins were a little bit better off than if they didn't have good investments. So a little bit complicated, but the report goes into much more detail than just those margins.
Sure.
It talks a lot about what the kind of utilization is at the hospitals. So how many people are actually going? How many, do the hospitals have a majority of people going to them who are in our public programs like Medicaid and Medicare or in private insurance plans? What is their status in terms of their ability to pay off debts that they have? Like how much cash do they have on hand if there were a crisis? Those kinds of things are all really relevant to the ability of the hospitals to perform in a strong, in a strong way for the state of Connecticut.
Well, one of the other other points I was going to say is, it looks like a shiny spot when you talk about almost a 400% increase in something called non-operating revenue. Why is that important?
Well, that's what really brought the total margins up this year. So the non-operating revenue is anything from investments to other revenues that they achieve that were not, let's say insurance reimbursements or things tied directly to care. That was a really critical thing this year, as was the COVID relief funds, right? So the federal government stepped in and provided significant financial assistance to hospitals, I think on the order of over $1 billion in the state of Connecticut, to help the hospitals through the last year. And as you know, last year, especially last year, we saw lots of surgeries being canceled, people not going for their care. And when that happens, the revenue drops at the hospitals. Fortunately, there was good market performance that saved the margins in a lot of cases, or brought up those margins. But that pointed to something very important, which is how dependent our health systems are on those kinds of things, those elective surgeries,
sure,
and those visits that come in. And so that, to me, sends a signal to us that we need to look at, how do we ensure that the hospitals have the revenue and capacity to run, but also don't run into a situation like that again, where we have to worry about canceled surgeries as being the issue that the hospitals have challenges.
I guess a good reflection of that is kind of on the opposite end, this 93% decrease in gain from patient care and related sources significantly. The bottom dropped out in 2020 for patient care and related sources.
Revenue. And people stopped going, right? People were nervous. And you had challenges also in the primary care space. People stopped going for primary care, which leads to built up problems, right? And you're seeing a bit of that now with the hospitalizations, is that because people put off care, the hospitals are now dealing with COVID patients, but also people with regular health care problems that may have, peaked because of care that was put off. So I think our vision is to ensure that we have, we want to ensure hospitals are capable of running and keep running, but more and more care, as you know, and I think any patient could attest to, is happening on the outpatient side of the equation now. More and more things are moving outside of hospitals, which is a good thing, I think, for the most part. I mean, the real goal, right, is to keep people healthy so they don't have to go to the hospital, but hospitals will always need to be there. But the trick is, how do we fund them in a way so that they don't have to depend on, you know,
the stock market.
These kinds of electives only to sustain their revenue.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge before us, and I think is one that they also are aware of and have been working with us on. So I'm pretty confident we're moving in the right direction and having conversations about how to move our healthcare system to a different place where we can be sure we have some stability, which I think the report shows that we're pretty good. Lots of states have these same challenges, but that we really need to reconcile the healthcare system to be one that, you know, isn't necessarily just dependent on these kinds of revenues every time somebody comes in the door, but rather there's a predictable source of funding with some ties to quality and ties to, you know, staying within budgets and things like that.
Sure.
So that's the general move of healthcare across the United States. And I think, you know, you'll see Connecticut moving more and more in that direction with the hospitals at the table and the carriers and our employers.
Excellent.
Consumers, because that's how it's got to be.
Very good.
We have to get everybody together to move forward.
Well, we'll leave it at that. That's a good way to wrap our conversation for today. We thank you for your insight and being able to break some of this really complex information down into some conversation that folks can really understand out of this report. Vicki Veltri is the Executive Director of Connecticut's Office of Healthcare Strategy. Their annual report on the financial status of our state's short-term acute care hospitals is available for you, as well as all of the other information you may need to know about the Office of Health Strategy at ct.gov/OHS. Vicki, great to hear your voice and to know that you are safe and your team is working hard, and we can't wait to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and take care.
Well, it was so great to open the show with Lori Brown at the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters and close the show with another great friend of the program, a fantastic resource, not just for the award-winning For the People and our listeners, but for the entire state of Connecticut. I'm talking about NOFA, of course. We have every year attempted to be part of and attend their winter conference in person and spend a whole program talking to their speakers and their guests and their exhibitors and NOFA leadership. But unfortunately, COVID has continued to plague the in-person part of the NOFA conference. So it'll be going virtual again this year. Jeremy Pelletier is with us. He's Director of Operations for the Northeast Organic Farming Association of Connecticut. NOFA CT. Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So beyond the introduction, we know from talking with NOFA representatives that virtual isn't necessarily a bad thing. It really kind of opens up opportunities for people who may not be able to travel to or work out the time and date of an in-person conference. And it makes it a lot easier and maybe brings a lot more people into the NOFA fold. Do you anticipate that'll be the case again this year?
Yeah, I do. We all miss in-person events, but what the virtual conference does, it allows us to offer more education, and something that I think we're going to try to, you know, once we're able to meet live again, something that we want to keep doing is with the virtual events, we can actually record things and have them available for people year round. So you can attend the conference virtually and go back and watch the workshops that you missed. So that's one thing that's, you know, has been a positive for the virtual events, and a lot more education and the ability to record and have, you know, a library of these really great resources available year round.
Yeah, and with the fact that a lot of people might be having a little bit harder of a time financially this year, you're also introducing some sort of a targeted scale for individuals to ensure everyone can afford to attend the conference.
That's right. For the first year, it's the first year we're doing this, we're offering a sliding scale. So the lowest price, and you just pick your own price, whatever you want, no questions asked. So the lowest price is $15, and then it goes up to $160. And there's a reason for each of those prices. The $160 represents two tickets. For example, if you're going to choose the $160 level, basically you're buying a ticket at cost for yourself and a scholarship for another person. And there's increments throughout that. I think the true cost, the break-even cost for us to put on this conference is $80. And so if you want to purchase the $80 ticket, knowing that that's going to pay for the things we need to put on this conference. Mm-hmm. But one thing we're also implementing this year so that everyone can join us is we have a ton of scholarships available from our sponsors, from people who purchase the higher tickets. We're able to put that money into a pool where folks can just, you know, request a scholarship. Again, mm-hmm. no questions asked. Yeah. We really want this to be an accessible conference for everybody.
Yeah, and of course, NOFA Connecticut, like all your counterparts around the country, are nonprofit organizations. So, there's a little bit of a tax benefit there if you're able to actually buy that $160 top-end ticket, which will provide the ability for someone else to also attend the conference who might not otherwise be able to afford to do so, maybe even bringing someone into the NOFA fold for the very first time. Give us the quick details on the conference, Jeremy. When's it happening?
Sure. Obviously it's going to be virtual over the course of 1 week. The kickoff date is going to be Friday, February 11th, and that's just going to be a welcome session, not too long. We're going to, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, but we're going to introduce the winner of this year's or the awardee of this year's Bill Dusing Organic Living on the Earth Award. But the conference, the education starts that Monday. So Monday, February 14th, and it runs through Friday. And on our website, ctnofa.org, in fact, today I'm putting in the schedule today, so you can go look at all the different workshops that we have available starting probably this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, as we like to remind people, the flagship station for the people where it all started on WPLR, that radio station in its infancy in the first few years of its existence was pretty much freeform FM radio with little direction or limitations on content. And our dear departed Bill Dusing hosted an organic farming and gardening program way back over 50 years ago on one of our radio stations. And he was one of the very first guests 30 years ago when I first started putting this show together. And he had been a staple on the program all the way up to when we lost him a couple of years ago. So mm-hmm. it's wonderful that you're able to keep the name of Bill Dusing alive and to utilize all the great things that he did to continue to bring other people, young people who can really make a difference to NOFA and the organization and the planet for that matter, to be better through this scholarship.
Yep, exactly. And the award, we're accepting nominations. The deadline is January 31st, 2022. And this can be a person or an organization, an organic advocate, an educator, mentor, mm-hmm. farmer, who demonstrates the advancement of organic living on the earth with a project, innovation, action, or lifestyle that supports the work of Bill Dusing. So you can find the nomination form on the homepage of ctnofa.org, and we encourage anybody to nominate someone who you think is deserving of the award.
Great. Well, let's turn to the conference. One of your other things there at NOFA is that you're the Organic Land Care Director, and mm-hmm. every year this conference does more and more to educate and expand the certified league of NOFA organic land care professionals, and I imagine this conference is no different.
That's right. Yeah. So we have a few tracks at the conference. One being dedicated to organic land care. And so we have, I'm happy to go into which workshops fall under that category, but we're definitely going to be offering quite a bit of education in that side.
Excellent. Well, yeah, let's hit a couple of the high point workshops of the conference and then remind people that they can look and take a deep dive into what they could expect in any of the workshops now at ctnofa.org, because all of the details are up on the web. Which ones are you really looking forward to?
Yeah, we have a bunch. A few that I'm personally going to attend myself, as long as I'm not working, is Chip Osborne's going to be speaking about organic land care trends across the country, what to expect. So if you're a landscaper or someone interested in land care, he's going to be going over how the industry is moving, where the industry is moving across the country, and what to expect in 2022. So that's an important one to go to, especially if you're a landscaper. We're going to have Edwina von Gaal talking about restoration. Her organization called Two Thirds for the Birds is a project that aims to, and this can be for anybody, whether you're a homeowner or whether you live in an apartment or have a farm, is using your land or your space as a means of restoration for birds. And so she's going to be talking about that, or restoration habitat for birds.
Yeah.
And so she'll be talking about that on Tuesday. A few others, we're going to be having a book club style discussion with Ayanna Wright, where she's going to be discussing Farming While Black, which is a great book that came out a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a book club style session.
Yep.
And
well, I was going to say, coming off the heels of our featuring Eco 59 and the Seed Initiative, you're also going to have some workshops, or at least one on seed selection and preservation, or something like that.
Yeah, there's going to be we have a whole seed track. We're calling it the Seed Conference within the Winter Conference, of course, and that we're going to have Bill Braun up from Ivory Silo Farm talking about chicory breeding. Let me just find some of these seed tracks ones here.
Yeah.
There is a seed selection workshop with Huron Breen. There's native seed propagation, collecting, cleaning, and sowing by the Native Land Trust. Mm-hmm. We're going to have From Seed to Harvest, Optimizing Your Seed Investment with Paul Feenan. And there's a couple of pre-recorded sessions that you can watch as well. Elizabeth Hoover, her talk, Seed Sovereignty, is going to be available for attendees as well.
Very good. Well, it's all available for folks who might be interested, not exclusively at all for farmers and professional agriculture professionals and organic land care specialists and landscapers. A lot of information for folks who just love to garden and get their hands in the dirt. And we hope that while it is not going to be an in-person conference for 2022, that this milestone conference draws the most attendance that you've had and brings a lot of folks into the Connecticut NOFA fold. Once again, the organic 40th Connecticut NOFA's 40th Winter Conference coming up starting February 11th. Go to ctnofa.org for more information. And we want to thank you, Jeremy Pelletier, who's Director of Operations at NOFA Connecticut, the Northeast Organic Farming Association of Connecticut, NOFA, ctnofa.org. Jeremy, thanks a lot and good luck with the conference. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone.
Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.